Dura, Sam Alkoff, Tay Maria, Studio, John Hamilton, Robbie Karen, Honey Masood, Mary Conlon, Julie Crosby. Special thanks to Becca Staley, John Randolph. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us. Stay safe.
KBOO, Portland, Oregon, 90.7 FM on your Portland dial, KBOO.FM on your everywhere on earth internet dial. Stay safe, stay sane, stay tuned. KBOO, the best in community radio.
Did you know that KBOO podcasts all our news and talk shows?
You can find the podcast on KBOO's website, KBOO.FM, on Google Play, iTunes, and Stitcher.
Just search for your favorite show and hit subscribe to get all the latest episodes downloaded to your favorite device.
Or search for KBOO on iTunes, Google Play to get all the KBOO podcasts.
Thursdays from 6 to 7 p.m. to hear Rose City Native Radio with your host, Jackie Malmstrom. Rose City Native Radio is a new public affairs program bringing you local and national Native issues and Native contemporary music. You can find more information about the show online at kboo.fm or find us on Facebook at Rose City Native Radio.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, a major school system in our area accuses its teachers' union of coordinating a shutdown of in-person classes with teachers calling in sick. Oregon launches a system to report positive at-home COVID tests. And an effort to get more representation in Portland's government for African Americans. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Thursday, January 13th, 2022. I'm Annette Newell. Glad to have you with us. As the Omicron wave of COVID cases sets new daily records, Portland Public Schools are pointing the finger at unionized teachers, saying they're coordinating absences. As KBOO's Jeffrey Wade reports, they are saying the union is trying to shut down in-person classes by having teachers call in sick.
Portland Public Schools have made allegations that some teachers may be coordinating absences in efforts to shut down schools. PPS officials sent warnings this week to some unionized educators that planned absences not made in good faith to prompt school closures due to staffing shortages is, quote, unlawful. On Wednesday, the district human resources chief, Sharon Reese, released an email maintaining that, quote, the vast majority of workers are showing up when you can and taking approved leave when you need to do so, end quote. Currently, six schools within the district have moved back to remote learning, with officials citing severe COVID-driven staffing shortages, including available substitute teachers, and some officials are questioning those closures. Other notes in yesterday's email also reported the district getting regular reports of educators being asked by colleagues to call in sick with the intention of shutting schools down. So far, the district has not released what evidence it has supporting these allegations or the exact number of reports received. Reese urged against this alleged activity, saying not only does it undermine in-school learning, it also detracts from the ability of teachers to take approved leave to deal with COVID-related issues and other legitimate reasons. Recommendations were also suggested for employees to speak with their union about their rights under contract. The union representing Portland teachers reached an agreement with the district earlier this year, urging educators on January 2nd to take care of themselves amid growing stresses of the pandemic while supporting colleagues to all do the same. With the KBOO Evening News, I'm Jeffrey Wade.
Two major sportswear giants with a huge local workforce made announcements this week that they will terminate employees who do not get the COVID-19 vaccine. Nike notified some workers this week that it's planning on firing them Saturday because they have not met the company's vaccine deadline or received an exemption for religious or medical reasons. Columbia Sportswear made a similar announcement Wednesday, giving unvaccinated employees without exemptions until February 1st to comply with the company's COVID-19 policies. Mostly, it involves corporate employees at Columbia because the company says the mandate does not apply to warehouse and retail workers. Columbia declared its support for President Biden's vaccine mandate last year. Nike mandated vaccines last October. Before that decision, Nike originally planned on employees returning to their offices starting January 10th as part of a new hybrid model. But company CEO John Donahoe vetoed that and made the decision to maintain the hardline vaccine requirement. Nike is still planning on carrying its line of Kyrie Irving shoes despite the basketball players refusing to get vaccinated. Officials from both companies predict the number of those fired will be small. Large companies nationwide are facing legal resistance and challenges. Today, the U.S. Supreme Court blocked the president's vaccine or test mandate for large employers. However, the court allowed the vaccination rule for healthcare workers. The Oregon Health Authority has announced the launch of a system where people can self-report positive COVID-19 reports from at-home test kits. The agency says it's not requiring people to report their at-home test results, but strongly encourages them to do so. This opt-in approach comes just 48 hours after a previous announcement not recommending at-home positive tests be reported to counties. OHA's new launch will allow people to self-report through an online form or by offering a hotline number to call. The aims of the new approach are refocusing from investigating individual cases and contact tracing to scrutinizing outbreaks in high-risk settings, such as those in congregate care, K-12 education, and food chain industries. The OHA says the idea to reroute at-home results follows the concern that staffing in county offices will be overwhelmed with people calling in their results, and by offering the newly launched model, more efficient data can be collected. Part of OHA's opt-in model is focusing on ensuring people who test positive for COVID or have been exposed to the virus can quickly access information and resources to safely isolate and quarantine. The website OHA is now offering for reporting results is oregon.gov/positive-COVID-test and will provide a user-friendly link to an online case investigation survey. It will soon be available in 12 languages. The COVID-19 case support hotline, 866-917-8881, will be open 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. Monday through Friday and 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. Saturday. Hotline staff will also be able to triage calls that might normally go to local public health services. People of color make up about a quarter of Portland's population. That makes it hard to reach half of the voters to elect city council members. Now, as Eric Tegedoff reports, advocates for democracy reform say proportional elections could represent more communities and coalitions.
Advocates for democracy reform say there is another way to hold elections that will better represent more communities. Proportional representation would be a change from the way current elections are run, as winner-take-all affairs where people must win more than half of the votes. Sol Mora, with the Coalition of Communities of Color in Oregon, says people of color don't make up 50% of the electorate in most places, so they often struggle for proper representation under this system.
Proportional elections, on the other hand, they're a voting system that really works to ensure that minority groups have a measure of representation in proportion to their share of the voters.
Portland currently is in the middle of a once-in-a-decade city charter review and reconsidering its city council makeup. Advocates want the commission examining the charter to look into setting up proportional representation. Any suggested changes to the charter will go before Portland voters in November. Mora says proportional elections would create more diverse coalitions for candidates.
For example, renters in the city or folks that support climate action, it's really creating an avenue for any of those groups of voters who can rally behind the ideas and values that they share to actually elect someone who also shares those beliefs.
Mora says alternative forms for election are in place across the country, including in Benton County, Oregon, which uses ranked choice voting in which voters rank candidates in order of preference. Jay Lee is a research associate with the Democracy Program at the Northwest think tank Sightline Institute. He says proportional representation has a number of upsides, especially for communities of color. He says it also could reduce the amount of money spent on campaigns since candidates would need to win over a smaller percentage of voters.
You reduce the incentive to spend more and more and more money on advertising budgets and campaign spending just to get that last 0.5% over your opponent.
Lee says reducing how much is spent on elections also could lower the barrier for new candidates and small campaigns. For Oregon News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
Republicans are threatening to skip the traditional presidential election debates. As KBOO's Josh Salem explains, the GOP is talking about withdrawing from the 2024 debate process.
The Republican National Committee said today they plan a rules change that will force presidential candidates seeking the Republican nomination to sign a pledge saying they will not participate in an event sponsored by the Commission on Presidential Debates. The commission was established in 1987 to make sure debates between leading candidates for president and vice president of the United States are a permanent part of the electoral process. In a recent letter to the commission, Republican National Committee Chair Ronna McDaniel demeaned responses to Republican concerns involving selection of candidates, holding a debate before early voting starts, and changing membership on the commission board. Former President Trump has also accused the nonprofit commission of unfair treatment, including selecting moderators biased against him. McDaniel said, quote, "Voters have lost faith in your organization, and we have proposed changes that will restore trust in the debate's process," end quote. She added she doubts the commission will address the serious issues that the RNC has raised. The RNC plans to amend rules at their upcoming winter meeting to prohibit future Republican nominees from participating in commission-sponsored debates. It is not clear what would take the debate's place in the event of a boycott. Debates represent the voters' only opportunity to see candidates from at least the 2 major parties appear side by side. Debates also often include domestic and foreign policy questions and issues which candidates might otherwise choose not to address. The RNC previously announced it would ban NBC from hosting primary debates after the October 2015 event drew criticism for including so-called gotcha questions designed to provoke conflict between the candidates. No matter how the RNC votes, there's still some chance the Republican nominee could participate in the debates. The nominee effectively controls the nominating convention, so they could decide to supersede the rules and participate if they believe taking part is in their best interest. For KBOO News, I'm Josh Salem.
A helpline for parents created during the pandemic provides emotional support for parents and youth in crisis over the next 3 years. California Governor Gavin Newsom's new budget funds the helpline. Suzanne Potter spoke to the president and CEO of Parents Anonymous Incorporated, which runs the helpline as part of its Raising the Future programs.
A helpline that provides emergency emotional support for California parents and young people would get a 3-year extension under Governor Gavin Newsom's new budget proposal released this week. The California Parent and Youth Helpline stands to get $4.7 million to continue its work helping people in distress. Dr. Lisa Payan Berlin with Parents Anonymous says the helpline has received 16,500 calls, texts, and chats since it started in the summer of 2020.
Our calls are up 26% since July of last year. Every single month, our call volume is going higher and higher.
In June, a CDC survey found 70% of parents said they'd had recent mental health challenges and 50% said they'd had suicidal thoughts in the past month. You can reach the helpline at 855-427-2736, Monday through Friday, 8 to 8, or go to caparentyouthhelpline.org. Dr. Payan Berlin says the trained counselors who answer the helpline teach self-calming and mindfulness techniques, help people build their support systems, and connect them with weekly free Parents Anonymous online support groups and other services.
What they get on the other end that's so important is somebody listening, who's not blaming and shaming them, and helping them deal with the immediate emotional issue they're facing.
The California legislature has until mid-June to approve a budget. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
With schools facing an onslaught of threats, social workers say making students feel like they can talk to staff about their safety concerns can help improve campus environments. As Mike Moen reports, students need to feel protected beyond extra metal detectors.
This week saw Duluth High School go on lockdown because of a threat received by authorities. School social workers across Minnesota say with campus safety still a big priority, they're carrying out approaches to make their environments less ominous and more welcoming. The latest threat follows last month's nationwide social media scare on TikTok, as well as a deadly school shooting in Michigan. Sarah Mongus, a middle school social worker in St. Peter, says students have increasingly dealt with more anxiety over the past couple of decades, with threats of violence playing a part. She says emotional connections between staff and students are important.
We've just found that if there's that connection, kids are able and willing to talk to those adults because they feel like they're cared for.
Her district has conducted surveys with high school students and fifth grade students, asking if they feel supported by at least one adult in their building. In both surveys, 3/4 of students say they do. Social workers in other districts say home visits and crisis intervention teams are also helpful approaches that complement standard security measures. Prior Lake High School social worker Nancy Van Horn says social media messages often blend the outside world with campus environments. If those scenarios make a student not want to come to school, her staff might visit them at home to make them feel reassured or accompany them on campus.
You know, I had a student come in before students got here one morning, and we kind of walked the building and we talked through some anxieties that she was having.
Kathy Kimani heads the support office at St. Paul Public Schools. She says de-escalation efforts are important when trouble arises, but she says there are other important ways to foster a safe environment, including social and emotional learning.
We might do things like implement some restorative practices, which would start off as students actually sitting in a circle, building community, getting to know one another.
All 3 of these professionals, members of the Minnesota School Social Workers Association, say the pandemic has added to the anxiety students are feeling. Mike Moen, Minnesota News Connection.
You are listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for Noise Filter. Then at 6, it's Rose City Native Radio. Tonight's weather, overcast skies, a low down of 44. Tomorrow's weather, those clouds continue, a high near 50. Looking ahead to the weekend, mostly cloudy skies Saturday and Sunday. Highs in the low 50s, overnight lows in the mid-30s. Today in history, on this date in 1990, Douglas Wilder took office as the first African-American governor of an American state in Virginia. The quote of the day is from Douglas Wilder. "My experience politically has always been that one-word definition of politics, money. Keep your eye on the buck, and that tells you where the American people are going to be." In the wake of devastating wind-driven wildfires in Colorado, there's a spotlight on including people with disabilities in emergency planning. As Eric Galatis reports, the Marshall Fire tested the emergency response for the disabled community.
People with disabilities are often left out of conversations about disaster preparedness, and the recent Marshall Fire put Colorado's emergency managers to the test. Curtis Garrett is the disaster preparedness coordinator with Atlanta's community. He says the Disability and Disaster Hotline played a key role connecting people with emergency services, in part because state leaders included the disability community in their planning efforts.
State of Colorado Colorado as a whole is really moving forward and is considered a leader in disaster preparedness and disaster services for individuals with disabilities.
Garrett says when temporary shelters and other facilities are not prepared to meet the needs of all community members, people with disabilities can be separated from their neighbors and relocated to nursing homes against their will. Anyone in need of assistance can call the hotline at 800-626-4959. Sadie Martinez with the Colorado Division of Homeland Security and Emergency Management says her team has developed a framework for identifying actual resource needs rather than labeling people as special needs. The acronym CMIST provides an easy-to-remember checklist to ensure that all communications, medical, independence, safety, and transportation needs can be met in times of crisis.
Do we have American Sign Language interpreters or availability to get them right away? Somebody who uses oxygen or has to have access to their medication that did not come along with them, how are we able to get that to that shelter?
Garrett says ensuring that everyone is able to receive emergency messages and alerts is critical during emergencies, but too many media outlets continue to overlook people with disabilities. For example, TV broadcasters routinely cut sign language interpreters out of the picture.
My safety is dependent on hearing that message. It should be something they do that it's expected. You have to plug the microphone in. Well, it should be just as important to have the interpreter on screen. That should be a given.
This is Eric Gladys reporting.
England's Prince Andrew has to give up his military titles as a sexual abuse case against him proceeds. Buckingham Palace says Andrew will not undertake any public duties and will have to defend himself as a private citizen. The second son of Queen Elizabeth II will no longer use the title His Royal Highness and will have to give up his royal charities. It's a stinging rebuke from the royal family after a New York federal judge allowed a sexual abuse case against the 61-year-old to go ahead. Andrew is denying the allegations of Virginia Giuffre, who says he raped her while she was a teenager in a time period when he was friendly with the convicted sex predator Jeffrey Epstein. Congressional Black Caucus members call for changes to the filibuster. Inflation is at its highest rate since 1982. And the White House sends rapid COVID tests to schools. With the stories affecting our democracy, here's today's edition of 2022 Talks.
We're calling on the Senate to have that debate because we want to pass the John R. Lewis Voting Rights Advancement Act. We want to pass the Freedom to Vote Act. We know how much we have fought for.
Chair of the Congressional Black Caucus, Joyce Beatty, called on the Senate Wednesday to pass a pair of voting rights bills. President Joe Biden meets with Senate Democrats as pressure grows to drop the filibuster, requiring 60 votes to advance legislation. The president spoke in Georgia this week in favor of allowing a simple majority vote on the measures, but currently Democrats Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema and all 50 GOP senators oppose changing the rules. Republican South Dakota Senator John Thune.
I urge all of my Democrat colleagues to resist this blatant power grab by the Democrat leadership and preserve our long-standing commitment to representation for the minority in the United States Senate.
Amid growing inflation, Chief White House Economic Advisor Brian Deese said Wednesday the U.S. is well positioned to tackle economic challenges head on and added the president has a plan.
His approach to attacking prices and costs are grounded in the premise that the right way to do this is to build on the economic successes that we have seen, not to abandon them.
According to the Labor Department, consumer prices climbed 7% in 2021, the highest increase since 1982. Which may be creating a drag on the president's job approval ratings. Just one-third of Americans approve of the job President Biden is doing, a new low, in a Quinnipiac University poll released Wednesday, a slight dip from November's rating of 36%. Another pressure on the president's popularity is the latest coronavirus surge. White House COVID-19 response coordinator Jeff Zients said Wednesday the Biden administration will send free rapid tests to schools each month in an effort to keep them open.
These 10 million additional tests available each month will allow schools to double the volume of testing they were performing in November.
Health officials now believe the Omicron variant will likely infect nearly everyone, regardless of vaccination status, but most people will weather it. Finally, a Guttmacher Institute report finds more than 100 abortion restrictions were enacted in 19 states last year, the most since abortion rights were affirmed by the U.S. Supreme Court in 1973. The report also found some states expanded access to pregnancy and postpartum care and access to over-the-counter contraceptives. I'm Nadia Ramlagan for Pacifica Network and Public News Service.
Arguments heard on both sides in South Dakota's Mount Rushmore fireworkers fight. One tribe extends its tourism ban due to the COVID-19 surge. And a California state lawmaker proposes that schools and tribes collaborate. For more on these stories, here's National Native News.
The Eighth Circuit Court of Appeals heard arguments Wednesday in South Dakota's ongoing battle to shoot off fireworks at Mount Rushmore. The state's appealing the National Park Service's denial of a 2021 permit. Victoria Wicks has more.
Nicole Dugenot represents the Cheyenne River Sioux Tribe, which defends the National Park Service's denial of a fireworks permit at Mount Rushmore in 2021. In 2020, NPS approved a permit for the fireworks event that hosted then-President Donald Trump, but Dugenot told the three-judge appellate panel that that permit was illegal because it did not comply with the National Historic Preservation Act to prevent harm to cultural properties and sacred sites.
When the NPS denied the permit in 2021, it properly did so because that process is not over.
Dugenot said since 2020, an additional 100 protected sites have been identified. She said the research should not be rushed.
It's not just that the process is complete, but also that it is done meaningfully and in good faith.
The attorney representing South Dakota is Jeffrey Harris. He told judges that NPS completed the necessary tribal consultations in 2020.
The alleged threat to many of the cultural or historical items would be from environmental or wildfire or other issues such as that, which of course we have 100 pages of careful analysis saying why those are not likely to be concerns.
Harris said the same conditions existed the following year when NPS denied a permit. Although the 2021 permit application at the heart of this appeal is now moot, the state wants a ruling before it applies for a permit for fireworks this summer. For National Native News, I'm Victoria Wicks in Rapid City, South Dakota.
The Havasupai tribe in northern Arizona has extended its total ban on tourism amid concerns about COVID-19. Arizona Public Radio's Ryan Heinches reports.
Last week, the Havasupai Tribal Council voted to suspend all tourism until June 1st, but leaders say the small reservation will remain off limits to visitors for the foreseeable future out of an abundance of caution and to protect its approximately 650 residents from COVID. The remote reservation, located at the bottom of the Grand Canyon outside the national park boundary, has been on lockdown throughout the pandemic. The council initially put a tourism ban in place in March 2020 and has since renewed it four times. According to the tribe, Havasupai officials have been actively vaccinating residents and are consulting with health experts, but Chairman Thomas Sayuja Jr. says the reservation will remain closed because of unknown factors surrounding the Omicron variant. COVID infections in northern Arizona's Coconino County, which includes the Havasupai Reservation, shot up to their highest ever levels during the last week of 2020. Health officials expect the local surge to continue for several more weeks. The Havasupai tribe isn't taking any reservations for this year to see its popular picturesque blue-green waterfalls and is instead rebooking for 2023. For National Native News, I'm Ryan Heinches in Flagstaff.
California Assemblymember James Ramos is proposing schools and tribes collaborate to increase knowledge about California Native American history and culture in the classroom. The lawmaker discussed his proposal Wednesday before the Assembly Education Committee.
And it's the dream of the California's First People would be to see the history of California's First People taught to both Native American and non-Native American students alike in the state of California, instilling pride in the Native American students and to further understanding in the non-Native kids about the true and factual history, good and bad.
Ramos says he's fine-tuning the bill, which will be introduced soon. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
A new program invites Latino and Native American students to Washington's three law schools, which are in Seattle and Spokane. As Eric Tegedov tells us, a Central Washington University is hosting the effort.
The state's three law schools at Gonzaga University, Seattle University, and the University of Washington are collaborating with Heritage University on a three-week course at the school's Toponish campus over the summer. Heritage University President Dr. Andrew Sund says some law firms have told him they have difficulty recruiting attorneys in the region.
The idea sort of appeared that maybe we needed to have a stronger effort to encourage people from Central Washington to have a future orientation, think of themselves as attorneys in the future, and perhaps work in the region. So it's a grow your own type of concept.
Sun says his school is a natural fit for this recruitment effort with its successful criminal justice program, and it is located on the Yakima Indian Reservation. Heritage is one of two schools in the nation that is both a Hispanic-serving institution and a Native American-serving non-tribal institution. Sun says the most important aspect of the course is it's being taught by faculty from the law schools who will come to Heritage. He notes it would be difficult for students to travel to Seattle or Spokane since many have part-time jobs. Sun adds the cost of law school is only one of the obstacles that keeps some students away.
Perhaps harder to explain are some of the barriers people face when they have not grown in an environment where higher education was part of their life path, when you're first generation, and just learning to navigate the process is very difficult.
Sun says the Latino population is rapidly becoming the majority in Central Washington.
It's a beginning, but it's a very important step to having a stronger, diverse society that is happening anyway, but we need to make sure that the professions are also represented that way.
For Washington News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Thursday, January 13th, 2022. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. Our remote production team for tonight's newscast includes Jeffrey Wade, Josh Salem, Eric Tegedoff, Suzanne Potter, Mike Moen, and Eric Alatis. The producer is Annette Newell, and our engineer is Otto. Special thanks to Public News Service and Native Voice One. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K2A2BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220 HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Annette Newell. Thanks for listening. All of our KBOO programs, including the evening news,